This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation. Mystery Hour with James O'Brien.
3 minutes after 12 is the time. That animal airlift story is not going away. We didn't touch on it ourselves today because there's so much else to get stuck into. But do keep an eye on that if you are of a mind to do so. But we concern ourselves next with Mystery Hour, your weekly opportunity to achieve the sort of satisfaction not ordinarily available anywhere else on your radio dial. The way it works is this. You have a mystery, a question, a conundrum, something that needs solving, and you know there will be a solution, an answer, a resolution, but you don't know what it is. So you ring me and you ask it, and then someone else rings me and tells me the answer. And somehow, that relatively simple premise creates radio magic on a weekly basis. The only rule, as it goes, is that you're not allowed to look anything up. So if you hear someone else ask a question, you think, oh, I'll Google that. Just don't be silly. Obviously, we could all do that. The fun is in the journey rather than perhaps the destination. And the number is the same as always. 03456060973. Before we get stuck in, two texts just made me chuckle during the break. The first says, who retweeted the tweet? I didn't do the reveal on that, not because I forgot like I usually do, but I just thought it was really obvious. So Joe Lycett, the comedian Joe Lycett, tweeted, Boris Johnson, don't rise to it, babe. I'm with Nadine. We are on your side no matter what. Kiss, hug, kiss, hug, kiss. And I said, you'll never guess who retweeted it. I thought it was rhetorical, but quite a lot of you do apparently need the reveal. Nadine Dorries retweeted it, thinking it was real. Boris Johnson, don't rise to it, babe. I'm with Nadine. We are on your side. And it's written in text speak. You know, we are, just the letter R, on your, you are side no matter what. I thought that was quite funny. And this text from John, and John, I'm going to sound very ungrateful. And I don't mean to, because it was kind of you to take the time to send it. It says, James, love the show, but leave the government alone. And I'm sort of thinking, John, which show is it that you love, mate? Because if it's this show, then leave the government alone suggests you might have accidentally, you might have got me mixed up with Ken Bruce. I don't know. I won't be doing that. I won't be doing that. And Liz has texted to say, I've just turned on my radio and there is no mystery. What's happening? Well, there is a mystery. I just took a moment to share a couple. Now you've revealed, Liz, in that text that you haven't been listening to the first 2 hours of the show. Are you not really allowed into Mystery Hour unless you've listened to the other 14 hours that we do together every week? 6 minutes after 12 is the time. And remember that there is now a Mystery Hour board game, which we're almost completely sold out, actually. So the only way you can get your hands on one, I think Amazon have still got a few, but we're restocking imminently. But we have got prizes set aside, so you can still win a Mystery Hour. The best contribution of the week will win a Mystery Hour board game. You can find the terms and conditions at lbc.co.uk. That is known in the trade as keeping the lawyers happy. Now, let's keep everybody else happy by returning to the fray. Sam's in Sheffield. Sam, question or answer?
Question, James.
Carry on.
So, my brother has been in for surgery quite recently on his back.
Oh, yes.
And it left me thinking, what happens when there's a fire in a hospital if a surgeon is mid-operation? Obviously, you know, if it's a minor surgery, you'd think it would be fine, but what happens if it's something that can't be stopped?
No offence, mate, but that's quite a morbid...
Yeah.
Is your brother all right, is he?
Yeah, he's fine. Oh, he ended up having to go in for a second one. It was quite a stressful period.
No, I bet it was.
And I've got a dodgy fire alarm. So
you just somehow your brain knitted the two events together and came up with this curious and rather morbid inquiry. I mean, I'm curious now myself, so it's worked as a question.
It's been sat with me since Christmas morning.
You're unlikely to win the board game, I think, with this one. But it's early days. I mean, this could be the peak. This could be the peak. We'll find out for you, Sam. What happens, and it would obviously have to be a surgeon that answers this or someone attending to the surgeon. What happens if a surgeon is in the middle of a really complicated, massive operation and the fire alarm goes off? I mean, it might be like here, Sam, actually. The fire alarm goes off here. Sometimes we stay... Actually, I don't know what the actual rules are So I'll shut up, actually. What happens if you're in the middle of really, really important surgery and the fire alarm in the hospital goes off? 0345 606 0973. Thank you, Sam. Tristan is in Malden. Tristan, question or answer?
It's a question, please, James.
Top man, carry on.
I'm a new listener, but big fan. I've been catching up on all the backlog of podcasts, by the way, and even read both your books recently.
Good Lord, you've gone straight in the deep end. Fantastic. Thank you, Tristan. It's great to have you on board.
So I've always been cursed with quite a sensitive sense of smell.
Oh, yeah.
Which my
Why do you say cursed?
It depends where you are. If you ride in a tube, it's not great.
Oh, I see what you mean. Okay, fair enough. Yeah. Say no more, yes.
But my new bride has just recently fallen pregnant. We're both very happy.
Congratulations.
But her sense of smell, thank you. Her sense of smell has just caught up with mine. And it made me realise that I don't really understand how smell works. What makes us lose our smell, what makes us more sensitive, and in this case, why pregnancy would make it so acute.
Well, you're only allowed one question, so is that it? Why does your sense of smell get better during pregnancy?
Yes, thank you.
Is that true commonly? I can't remember. It's a while ago now for me.
Yeah, my mum was telling me how she couldn't bear the smell of tea and coffee during her pregnancy and different things, but seemed a lot more sensitive to it all.
I like that. I like that a lot. And, I mean, you could be in the long, I don't know what you do for a living, but they'll pay a fortune for a nose like yours in grass in the perfumery industry, you know.
That would be great. After the last couple of years, I could do with a new career.
Well, I'm only half kidding. I know someone who's got an amazing sense of smell, but it's a friend of my daughter's, and they've looked into it. Genuinely, I don't know whether they're called super smellers or something like that, but it is a thing. It might be worth looking into. It'd be nicer than sniffing someone's armpits on the tube. Anyway, 10 minutes after 12 is the time. Thank you, Tristan. Why does the sense of smell get better or worse, depending on how you look at it, when you are pregnant? 0345 606 0973. Dan says, who was it in your ear reminding you to quote the legal bit about the game? We heard it. I don't know what you're talking about. Karen's in Canterbury. Karen, question or answer?
It's a question, please.
Carry on, Karen.
I've got some tulips in a vase.
Oh, how lovely. Are they from Amsterdam?
Oh, I didn't check the label, but that would be nice, wouldn't it?
It would. Carry on.
As we're getting ready for school this morning, one of the kids said, why have you got some pennies in the bottom of the vase?
Yeah.
I said, well, because then the tulips stay up straight and they don't, you know, in a few days, wilt over.
Is that true? I've never heard that before.
Well, it works.
Well, how do you know it works? Unless you've got another vase full of tulips next to the one with the coins in that hasn't got coins in, and you're doing a real-time peer-reviewed comparison in laboratory conditions.
OK, it's not laboratory conditions. I give you that. But I used to not put a coin in, and then when I started putting a coin in, it worked.
Yeah, but you don't know that it worked.
Well, the ones I've got aren't drooping.
Yeah, but they will droop eventually.
Only when they're dead.
Really? They literally carry on for much longer, you believe?
Try it.
I will now. We've actually got some tulips in a vase at home. Seriously, I only noticed them this morning. So why does a copper coin allegedly enhance the bloomability of a tulip?
Yeah, why does it stop them drooping over and wilting?
Do you do it with other flowers?
Just tulips.
Is it just tulips? Because I was thinking perhaps a daffodil.
They stay up anyway.
They do, actually. You're right. But I put some in front of the fire the other night, the gas fire, because I wanted them to open, and it didn't work. Yeah, they really drooped. 12 minutes after 12 is the time. Thank you, thank you, Karen. We go next to Christine, who is in Southgate. Christine, question or answer?
Oh, question, please, James.
Yes.
I would like to know why some people are beautiful singers and some people like me really do sound like a bag of cats.
Oh, me too. It's a cruel twist of fate. I can't draw and I can't sing. I wish I could do one or the other. Or ideally both. Is it a mystery? I mean, isn't it just like playing football or anything else, that some people are good at stuff and some people are good at other stuff?
Yeah, but you can work at football, can't you? And might never be kind of Pele, but you'd get better.
Yeah, but you could.
Terrible.
No, but you could. Someone could. There'd be someone. David Grant was always, he'd say he could make anyone sing.
He never met me.
No, you'd say. Well, so what the question is,
What is it physically about David Grant that means he's a beautiful singer?
Yeah. Or Charlotte Church, actually. I met Charlotte Church this week. She's full disclosure that tomorrow it'll drop. And she bursts into song a couple of times in the interview. And it is incredible. And when you think back
Absolutely.
To her, And she knew. I mean, it just came out of her when she was tiny. There it was, almost fully formed. This amazing talent.
It's beautiful.
It is beautiful.
Unfortunately, my children have followed me.
Have they? I think we might have got lucky on that one. I shall find out for you. What is it that determines why some people are great singers? I don't know if we'll get an answer, but I certainly like the question. What determines that some people are great singers and some people are like Christine and me and Rob? I can sing some songs. I got into the school choir because for some reason I can sing To Be a Pilgrim. Bang on, every note. Absolutely perfection. Can hardly sing anything else. So when I was singing To Be a Pilgrim, and the teacher's going around listening to us all, and he puts his ear near your mouth, and you're singing away. He goes, "Yep, you, O'Brien, over there." And the first choir practice, we're singing something else. He goes, "You, O'Brien, out you go." Shortest ever appearance in the school choir. And at my school, the choir used to make records and everything, so it was quite a good gig to get on. 12:15 is the time. Carl's in Liverpool. Carl, question or answer?
Hi, it's a question.
Carry on.
Humans can see 7 colours in a rainbow.
Yes.
Is there another animal on the planet that sees more than 7 colours? And if so, what are they?
Right. Why do you want to know?
I love rainbows.
I love rainbows. I love rainbows as well. How would we know whether an animal can see more than 7 colours?
I don't know. There must be a scientist out there who knows how many colour receptors an animal has, if that's what enables us to see the colours.
Yeah, you're on. Okay. I like it. I don't know, how it would work. I suppose if you know how the sight of an animal, I would have thought animals see fewer colours than us, don't they, most of them? But it's a good question, I like it. Can any other animals see 7 colours in a rainbow, or more? 0345 606 0973. Why can some people sing and other people can't? Why does a copper coin prolong the lives of your tulips? Why do pregnant people get an enhanced sense of smell? And what happens if you're in the middle of surgery in an hospital when the fire alarm goes off? It's 12:15.
Mystery Hour on LBC with James O'Brien.
18 minutes after 12 is the time. Let's crack straight on. Jill is in Bordeaux. Jill, question or answer?
Answer.
Carry on.
The operating department fire.
Oh, yes.
Yes. If you have a patient open on the table and the fire alarm goes off,
yes,
everyone's informed that there may be a fire close to where they are. The surgeon doesn't proceed any further with any extra, if you like, surgery. So no further incisions are made, no further patients are anaesthetised. Basically, the patients are prepared for evacuation, so you don't proceed. You keep doing the operation you're doing, but you don't proceed to anything else.
So you finish the stage that you're at.
Exactly.
As it were. Would you have to sew the patient back up?
You may have to do, but basically you just wait to be told. If you're given the order to evacuate, then if you can evacuate the patient, you do so as safely as you can.
But if you can't?
It may be that you can't, in which case all non-essential staff are evacuated and the surgical team are asked if they're prepared to stay and carry on, and then it's up to them to make the decision, yes or no.
Crikey. Qualifications?
Yeah. I was a theatre nurse at Guy's Hospital, and I wrote the fire protocol for the department back in about 1990.
Oh, that's good. You wrote the fire protocols for precisely the scenario that Sam was asking about.
I did.
Yeah, I think we know what that deserves.
I'm Ray Liotta, and you're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. If you build it, they will come.
Happy days. How about that, Jill? First answer of the day, and it's a Ray Liotta, which is reserved, of course, for people whose qualifications are above and beyond all expectations.
Thank you.
And that's a cracking answer. I'm now worried about someone being left behind when everyone legs it out to surgery, just waking up. Go. Crikey, I can smell smoke. Frank's in Bromley. Frank, question or answer?
Question, mate.
Yeah, carry on.
So, you know when you're going out for a drink and that, and you can drink and drink and drink,
yes,
and then you finally go to the toilet?
Yes.
Why is it you cannot stop going to the toilet afterwards?
Indeed.
I waited a good week to say this.
The breaking of the seal.
The breaking of the seal.
So, once you go, you go. I don't know.
Yeah.
I think we may have had this before, But I can't remember. No, that's great. I mean, you're on the board. I can't remember, which is embarrassing. But yeah, it's true, isn't it? You're fine for a while. You'd be 3-4 pints in, and you're absolutely fine. And then once you go, you go. You're in. You're up
every
and down.
5 minutes.
Like a fiddler's elbow. You're on. Thank you, Frank. I like it. I'll find out for you. I don't think there's anything you can do about it. But why would that be? Once you go, you need to go several times. Nicely done as well, Frank. Thank you for phrasing that so delicately. 21 minutes after 12 is the time. Grant is in Bermondsey. Grant, question or answer?
It's a question, James. How are you?
Very well indeed. What have you got for me?
Well, so I started dating a girl last year.
It's not that kind of well. It's not that kind of mystery, have mate. I can't. It's not.
So we started dating last year, and she's really, really into Asian cuisine.
Right.
But I absolutely hate cooking rice.
Oh.
But like lots of I don't mind rice and whatnot, but I was never really a big fan of it.
Okay.
And then I was just like, right, I hate cooking rice, and things are going really well, and I'm cooking rice a lot. Why don't I just buy a rice cooker?
Yes.
And I buy one.
Yes.
And cook with it, and it's bloody amazing. Every time.
We're now going to lurch into some sort of middle-class hellscape, but I too recently acquired a rice cooker, and I too love it to pieces.
It's amazing,
it's
right?
Just
every time.
Nuts. Yes.
Perfect rice. It's so good.
It is. And have you improvised yet? Have you gone off-piste? Have you used it to make a risotto?
Totally.
Or, I mean, there's all sorts of so incredibly good stuff, isn't it? It's amazing.
I'm just using it for like a basic, I've just got on a basic one. I don't have like one of the fancy ones because I was just like, I'm just going to spend like just the cheapest one, just see if it works.
Yep.
The cheapest one is amazing.
Yeah, you're right.
But
completely.
So I started. I've done vegetables in it. Like you can steam vegetables. You can do all of this stuff. Anyway, cut to the chase.
Yeah. What on earth is the question?
How does the damn thing know to make perfect rice? How does it work?
In other words, why doesn't it undercook or overcook?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Like you put a cup of rice into a cup and a half of water.
That's right.
And it just knows.
And then,
how does it know?
And also, it stays, even if you don't, if it finishes and you don't open it for a while, it stays perfect, doesn't it?
It's just amazing.
I do find your enthusiasm infectious. I wonder how many rice cookers we've sold between us in the last 3 minutes.
People,
Amazon has crashed.
Get a rice cooker.
You're absolutely right. It's a very good question, which oddly I have now you've come to mention it. I have subconsciously wondered that myself as well. That's just weird. How come? Because if we eat at different times, leave it in the rice cooker and it's still perfect for both sittings.
Can we eat earlier? You can I just do it. I put it on as first thing. And if I'm doing, like, I've really gotten into making Korean bibimbap, and that takes, like, a bit extra time to make all the other stuff. So I put the rice on first, and I come to it, like, half an hour, 40 minutes later, and it's still perfect.
That's incredible.
How does it work?
Let's find out. How does the rice cooker work? Thank you very much, Grant. And, I mean, if you are sponsored by Tefal, then you earned your money today. It is 24 minutes after 12. Eleanor is in Burton-on-Trent. Eleanor, question or answer?
It's an answer.
Splendid, thank you.
To the singing question, can some people sing better? It is mostly just practice, but there is an element.
It's not, though, is it? Because Charlotte Church
really just
opened her mouth when she was about six and just the music of the gods came out, whereas I did, and it was awful.
But there is an element of your physicality as well, so your voice box, the amount of fat on the back of your throat, and things like the musicality that you learn as a child as well, so how much music is in your house.
Yeah, but if it's we've all got muscles, haven't we? So why can some people just not sing?
They just never will have done. They'll have never practiced that particular skill.
So you think you could treat, or someone could teach Christine to hold a tune?
Yes.
Yeah, I've heard this before.
I have taught people that have been, or thought they were tone deaf.
Yes.
And then they've been able to sing. And it would only take a few months.
I believe you, actually. But I know Christine won't. It's funny that. Because I'm convinced that if I'd just had the right training, I could have been a wonderful singer, Eleanor. It's the world's loss, I feel, in some ways. You've had people who were absolutely shockingly awful. And then...
Yes. So I conducted the choral society for a short while. And there were some people there who you could play two notes and they couldn't hear the difference. And if you can't hear one note different from another note, you can't produce the difference. You have to be able to know what note you're trying to produce. But then if you teach your ear to be able to hear the different notes, you can then teach your voice to produce those different notes.
And so it is simply a matter of training a muscle, and the relationship with your ears, I suppose, is learned behaviour. Yeah. I don't know that Christine, the specifics of her question, why are some people better at singing than others? Actually, no, you have answered that as well. I also know the answer to my next question, which is, what are your qualifications?
I studied at Birmingham Conservatoire and Guildhall School of Music and Drama.
Can't say fairer than that. Round of applause for Eleanor, please.
Thank you.
No, thank you. 27 minutes after 12 is the time. When I was a younger man and a little bit more flippant, a little bit more puerile, I wouldn't then have done some singing on the show with Eleanor. I would have got her to sort of teach me a little technique to make myself less bad. But I'm obviously very mature now, having turned 50 last week. Tim is in Earl Shilton in Leicestershire. Tim, question or answer?
It's a question, please, James.
Carry on.
How do we know when we've chewed enough when we're eating?
Hey.
So we as adults can force ourselves to swallow something we don't want to.
Yeah.
Like a tablet or something like that. But I'm watching my tenement-fold eat now.
Right.
And she chews away and then she swallows. How does she know when she's chewed enough?
It's obvious, isn't it? I mean, it just feels like swallowable. You've got a kind of... Is that her in the background?
So when she hasn't chewed enough and she swallows and starts to choke, is it...
Well, that happens, doesn't it? I suppose it might be...
Oh, yes.
I don't know. But so I like the question. I just don't know that the answer is going to be...
I didn't know if it was based on chemicals and some sort of sentencing there, or if it was just based on feel.
I like it. What's she having for lunch? What's she having at the moment?
She's currently moved on to some custard.
Nice.
Multiple stages.
Nice.
Good time.
I like that bit of custard. Can I hear her in the background? Is that her making lovely...
That is her, yeah.
Oh, mate, that's just lovely, isn't it? Have a lovely day, both of you.
There she goes.
She sounds very happy. Is she really enjoying her custard?
She's delightful.
She's loving that custard, isn't she, Tim? Top man. 28 minutes after 12. How do we know? How do we learn? But babies know that they have chewed their food enough to swallow it. 0345 606 0973. Kieran's in Lincoln. Kieran, question or answer?
I've got an answer for you.
Carry on.
The answer. I'm going to put a bit more clarity in that question about your theatres, the operations.
Oh, okay.
In that. Yeah, and effectively what you have in an operating theatre is that you have separate ventilation systems normally for each theatre. In a normal hotel office building, when your fire alarm goes off, your ventilation closes down naturally to stop the spread of smoke around the building.
Yes.
In an operating theatre, they continue to run. So your ventilation continues to run with fresh air, independent ventilation to the theatres. So you have constant fresh air going into the theatres. The same principle is for ICUs, special care baby units. So effectively, the operation is conducted in fresh air and they remain in what they call positive pressure. So effectively, any smoke outside the operating room can't get into the operating theatre, and that provides them with what we call defend-in-place principles.
Right.
So that allows the surgeons to continue and then decide whether or not they continue the operation there in a safe environment, or effectively they do, as your previous caller says, they can evacuate, or they do an emergency closure and go out.
Fantastic.
And they practice that and exercise that every year, and we do practical exercises on that every year. So what they've got is they've got barriers, and approaching an operating theatre, you go through a smoke lobby. So when you go into theatres, you go through a lobby, and we call that a smoke lobby. So that stops smoke outside the theatre areas getting into the theatres, and then they remain in fresh air in the operating rooms.
You were listening
with their own separate supply.
You were listening to the radio this afternoon, and you could not believe your ears, could you, Kieran? You thought to yourself, "Oh my God, this is me. This is absolutely my moment. I don't believe this."
I am just in the middle of designing two new operating theatres in Lincolnshire for one of our hospitals. I could not believe it when it popped on the radio.
And you thought, this is it. Oh, that's just lovely. What are your qualifications? Obviously, we know now, but...
I'm a hospital fire officer.
A hospital fire officer. Do we... in actually currently designing The fire
and
safety.
In the middle, we're in the middle of, we've just finished designing and we're in the middle of building two new theatres at our Grantham hospital site. Oh, mate, so there's two new operating theatres going in there. So, yeah, in the middle of doing all the designs and all the principles for fire.
So you can't know. Because you are currently mid-job, I'm going to give you one of these.
I'm Ray Liotta and you're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. If you build it, they will come.
Top work, Kieran. Lovely stuff. It is 12:31. Amelia Cox is here with the headlines.
Mystery Hour on LBC with James O'Brien. Call 0345 6060973.
It's 12:35. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC, where Mystery Hour continues. That mean incredible. That we got two Ray Liottas in response to the same question, which means the person that answered the question, Sam, moves into pole position for the board game. And almost inevitably, the last thing I said to him was, I don't think you're going to win the board game with that question, Sam. Mystery Hour is like the negative to the other 14 hours of the week. 14 hours of the week, my predictions almost always come true, particularly ones about politics and Brexit and Boris Johnson and Donald Trump and the rest of it. Mystery Hour, my predictions never can't say, well, that's not a very good question. And then it just excites the most exciting response we've ever had. Oh, shows what I know. 12:36 is the time. Ross is in Birmingham. Ross, question or answer?
I've got an answer.
Carry on, Ross.
Right, it's an answer to the question about animals being able to see more colours than humans.
Yeah, go on.
In short, they can. We have, in our eyes, receptors called cones that can detect red, green and blue light, and that's how our brains form the rest of the colours, in the same way a TV does.
Yes.
Some animals have a fourth receptor that can detect ultraviolet light. So they can, in some birds in particular, they use it to find particular flowers that they might want to eat honey out of. They fly around and they light up like a Christmas tree, basically.
Is that right? So in the context of a rainbow, specifically looking at a rainbow, would an animal with a fourth cone see more colours than we do?
They'd probably see more colours down towards the bottom of the rainbow, past indigo and violet, yeah.
Well, qualifications?
I'm a biologist and I've got a degree in animal science.
I do nicely. That's a really, really lovely answer, Ross. And I don't know why, but I know I'm going to remember that forever. I often forget before I've even said goodbye to the caller, but something about the way you explained it has just stuck in my brain. I can tell. Thank you. Have a round of applause.
Thank you very much.
It's all about the fourth cone, you see. All about the fourth cone. 12:38 is the time. David's in Barnstable. David, question or answer?
Question.
Carry
question,
on. James. Carry on.
Skirting boards. What is the point?
You sound like Peter Kay. Garlic bread. This is actually, crikey, I never thought this day would dawn. I can answer a question about DIY. But have you, when's the last time you saw what was behind a skirting board?
Probably when my house is being built.
So you don't have a clear picture of it, because we live in quite an old house, so I know exactly what's behind it. If you take the skirting board away, it's a bit of a mess behind. You can't really get a nice, neat seal down to the floor, you see.
But here you go. So in our house, we've got hard flooring downstairs and carpet upstairs.
Very nice.
Thank you. but where the skirting board is, there's a strip of beading which joins the skirting board to the hard flooring, so it looks nice and neat.
Yeah.
So why can't you just attach the beading to the wall?
I think with the downstairs, you probably could. I don't think that's...
At the minute, the biggest problem is it's just such a pain when I'm doing the housework.
What is?
The skirting board.
Dusting them.
Goes at right angles to the
wall. Certainly, depending on how big the beading is, you could certainly do away with a skirting board. Did you say you built the house yourself?
No.
But so did it have wood floors when it was built, or did you do that as an aesthetic?
Oh, no, when we bought off plan. So we wanted hard flooring downstairs and carpet upstairs.
Yeah, I bet. That's what I meant when you built it yourself. I didn't mean did you carry the bricks in. I just meant it was you were the first people ever to live in it. I guess they don't offer you that option because of the building, all the other houses that they're building. There's a basic spec and then you can embellish and I bet. But I don't see why with a wood floor you would need a skirting board. But with with beading, but with everything else, it just means that you get flush to the floor. It hides the gaps behind it. Also, you know, stops rodents coming in and things like that. There's all sorts of reasons, but it's basically, I can't believe I'm saying this so confidently. It's almost certainly going to be challenged before I've even put the phone down. But it is because that point about the wood floors is it depends how big the gap is between the bottom of the plaster and the floor. That's it. It's to cover the gap between the bottom of the plaster and the floor because you can't plaster all the way down to the floor. And you might not even want to because you're going to have, you know, pipework and electrics behind there as well.
It's a shame, really, because I can also answer two of your other questions as
well. Doesn't work like that. Does
one
not,
of those weeks.
Doesn't work like that, David. And also, I may well be wrong, but in the meantime, I'll take a round of applause. Do you know, when I was younger and a little bit less mature, I used to do so much answering on Mystery Hour that there were times when I'd take 7 or 8 rounds of applause myself. In fact, some people used to think, when they stumbled across this programme by accident, some people used to think that it was an exercise in me showing off how much I knew and that you were actually supposed to ring in and challenge me. As if, I mean, even I'm not that arrogant. I know everything. Ring me and ask me a question. 12:41 is the time. But anyway, round of applause for me. Beverly's in Belgium. Beverly, question or answer?
Question, please.
Carry on.
Can what you eat before you go to sleep affect the type of dreams that you have? Like, if you eat cheese, does it really give you nightmares, basically?
I don't think it gives you nightmares, but it does have an effect upon the nature of your sleep, and the nature of your sleep has an effect upon your dreams. But you're going to want a more confident-sounding answer than that, aren't you? No, fair. I can't say I blame you. Well, I mean, you could conduct your own experiments. Do you never wake up having had astonishing dreams and then think, did I have cheese? Oh, I did. I had cheese last night.
Oh, no, I haven't.
You've never done that?
No. I heard you talking about the dreams and the faces thing the other week.
Yeah,
and then there was something about cheese that you mentioned, and that's what made me think of it.
Well, that was the first you'd ever heard of cheese affecting your dreams.
I've heard of it, but you said it and it triggered my memory, and I thought, oh, I'm going to ask that next time.
That's a good question. I always do that. If I have really vivid dreams, the first thing I do is think, did I have a lot of cheese yesterday? Did I have cheese last night? Why are you laughing at me? I think you're the abnormal one. I think everyone does what I do.
Maybe.
And no one does what you do. Everyone always wake up. Do you have vivid dreams ever?
Yeah, but I never think about what I ate before. But yeah,
you're now taking the mickey out of your own question.
I know.
Yeah. I never thought about what I ate. Anyway, I've rung in to ask a question whether what I eat affects my dreams. But I've never had a dream and then wondered about what I ate before. Well, we'll find out for you or remind ourselves. Thank you, Beverly. This is rather lovely. Returning to the death of Barry Cryer, one of the country's best loved and greatest comedians. A few people are sharing what is his favourite joke. He was asked in 2013 what his favourite joke was by the Yorkshire Post. It's a great question, that. Sometimes the best questions are the ones that are almost too obvious, you know? What's your favourite joke? And this was his reply. A man drives down a country lane and runs over a cockerel. He knocks at a nearby farmhouse door and a woman answers. He says, I appear to have killed your cockerel and I'd like to replace it. The woman replies, please yourself, the hen's around the back. Nick's in Putney. Nick, question or answer?
Question, James.
Carry on.
When is a language considered dead? For example, in Latin, we call it a dead language.
We do.
But we use Latin phrases in everyday conversation. And it's also used extensively across the Catholic Church. So...
it's going to be about conversations and communicating, isn't it, rather than liturgical or academic usage. So a language is dead when it's not the lingua franca anywhere anymore, where people don't speak it routinely to each other.
It is spoken in the Vatican, though.
Is it?
Yes, extensively.
But only as a kind of... there's no
ceremonial.
So that's the word I was looking for. I'm also wondering whether it is a question of a language is dead when nobody has it as their own language, their only language. That might work. It ceases.
Yeah, I could get behind that, yeah.
I'm not taking a round of applause. I just love the questions like this, so I'm thinking out loud. So, you know, people can speak Latin, but
yes.
Nobody can only speak Latin.
Yes. Yeah, I get that.
Well, it's a good question. I'll put it on the board, and someone may know. What is the actual definition, the official definition of a dead language? And I wonder how many people of my educational background are now intoning quietly, Latin is a language as dead can be. This is inscribed on the front of pretty much every Latin textbook in the world, I think, in the English-speaking world. Latin is a language as dead can be. It killed the ancient Romans, and now it's killing me.
We begin today with breaking news.
The world is complex, and it's getting more complicated by the day. Find clarity with the Guardian Weekly magazine. It's a roundup of world news, opinion, and long reads that have shaped the week, all handpicked from The Guardian and The Observer, and delivered to you. Subscribe before the 20th of February and get 50% off for 3 months. Visit theguardian.com/weekly subscribe.
Mystery Hour on LBC with James O'Brien.
Good grief, 12:49 already. We've got quite a few in need of answers. Copper coins in your tulip vase, why does that prolong their life? Sense of smell during pregnancy, why is it enhanced? Superb answers to the surgery and fire alarm question. Superb answers to the singing question and the rainbow question. Why when you are particularly in the pub, drinking beer more than anything else, I think this applies to you, probably because you never really chug that volume of liquid in any other circumstances, if you're a pint drinker. Why are you fine for a while in the context of a lavatory visit, but once you've been once you have broken the seal, as we say, that's it, you're up and down like a fiddler's elbow. How do rice cookers work? That's a lot more interesting than it sounds in the retelling. Dreams and food. What's the relationship between dreams and food and the definition of a dead language? And I've written down cheating. What was the cheating question? Chewing. How do we know? Can't read my own writing. That's terrible. How do we know when to swallow? How does a baby, when they start eating, when you wean a baby, how do they know when they've chewed enough to swallow? Okay, all of those in need of answers. Jonas is in Muswell Hill. Jonas, question or answer?
Answer.
Carry on.
Rice cookers.
Yeah.
How do they know? How do they switch off? They switch off because it involves a hot plate, a spring, and a thermostat.
Go on.
All rice cookers come with an approximation of rice ratio versus water.
That's correct.
In their book.
That's correct.
And you don't have to get it bang on, but you can throw that in. And then, obviously, it depresses the spring, which touches the thermostat when all the water's in. When the water evaporates and disappears, you're left with the perfect rice. The bowl pops up off the spring, and the thermostat cuts off, leaving it as a hot plate rather than a cooker.
Oh, so, okay. So it reaches us. It reaches a level
that... It reaches a certain weight.
And then it turns it off?
Yeah, it turns it off.
And then it just keeps it warm?
Keeps it warm, keeps the steam at the top in the sealed, under the sealed lid, to keep the moisture in, but not dry out.
Oh, what a lovely answer. Okay, I only say that because I'm not very technical and I completely understand it. So it's good. That makes perfect sense. Is there a bimetallic strip involved? There isn't a bimetallic. It's just a straight weight ratio.
Well, the modern ones might be slightly different. This is me doing research back in the 90s when I found that out because I was a chef in a pub and I couldn't cook rice. So I wanted to know how a rice cooker worked.
I looked this up
years ago.
In order that you could improve as a rice, as a cooker of rice? Or...
Well, no, because I bought a rice cooker, so I've been incensed at the fact that the rice cooker could cook rice and I couldn't.
Yeah, that's the beginning of the end, really, of humanity, that, wasn't it? It was when the robots started to take over.
Exactly, pretty much.
I think Isaac Asimov wrote that. It started with the rice cookers. Qualification. you've kind of told us already, but officially, what are your qualifications for answering this question?
So, yeah, pub chef who couldn't cook rice.
A round of applause for Jonas.
Thank you.
Lovely stuff. 12:52 is the time. Glyn's in Glossop. Glyn, question or answer?
Answer.
Carry on.
Skirting boards.
Yes.
They're there to... you're partly right with covering the joint where it meets the floor, but further than that, it's to protect the plaster from being knocked off.
Ah, yeah, of course it is. By feet and hoovers. Feet and hoovers and brushes and what have you as well. It'd be vulnerable at the bottom of the plaster. Yeah, I'd love it.
Yeah,
that's an embellishment to my answer, not a challenge to my answer.
No, not a challenge. It's half right.
Lovely stuff. Qualifications?
Joiner and cabinet maker.
There you go. Round of applause for Glyn.
very much.
No, thank you very much. 12:53 is the time. Eamon is in Hastings. Eamon, question or answer?
Answer, James.
Carry on, Eamon.
How are you going? Answer, just to add to what Glenn said there about the skirting boards. And with the skirting boards, I've just this second finished laying a parquet floor.
Oh, yeah.
And it's been miserable.
It's hard work, is it? Hard work laying a parquet floor because it's quite fiddly, isn't it?
Need breaking work, James. Need breaking work.
Mate, I couldn't do that. Not at this stage of my life. It takes me 10 minutes to get up again.
Fair play to you.
Carry on.
I know. Essentially, what it is, the other reason why there's a skirting board there is because if you lay any type of wooden flooring with an engineered oak parquet,
yeah.
Laminate. Essentially, you need an expansion joint all the way around between the floor and the wall, because even though timber is dead, it's still a live material. It'll expand and contract in the heat.
And so, if it didn't have any room to expand, albeit in relative, tiny proportions, if it didn't have any room to do it, then you'd get cracking. You'd get.
It's not just cracking; the whole floor would buckle.
Yeah, of course it would. Push upwards again.
Seams, it would over time. It would just buckle and crack. And
so, who'd have thought skirting boards were going to be such a rich source of information today, Eamon?
James. To be honest with you, I listen to you every day, and you're a font of knowledge, and it's nice to give something back.
Round of applause for Eamon. Great work. That was grand. Thank you, Eamon. Love that carpenter. Two carpenters. Jackie is in Stuttgart. Jackie, question or answer?
Answer, James.
Carry on.
Sense of smell when you're pregnant.
Oh, yes.
Because when I was pregnant with my first child, I couldn't bear the smell of raw meat. Even the thought of the smell of raw meat, I couldn't even look at pictures of raw meat. And I said to my midwife, why is it? Because I just my senses are more sensitive. And she said, well, because your blood volume increases when you're pregnant, your mucous membranes are better supplied with blood. So everything works better, you're more sensitive. And her pet theory was that it's also so that when you're pregnant, you don't want to be, there is bacteria that could harm you and the baby, so you're more aware of something being off.
I wondered that, actually, whether it was a sort of alarm system. But then it would kind of leave the question open as to why would that not happen all the time? There's no downside to being... Well, I suppose, no, there is a downside to it, because you would then be hypersensitive, like the guy who asked the question doesn't like travelling on the tube. Because Tristan, because he's got very sensitive
nostrils.
Physically,
it's just that you have better blood supply through your mucous membranes.
Qualifications?
Having been pregnant and had a very sensitive sense of smell when I was pregnant.
And then looked into it.
And asked my midwife.
Yes, you said, sorry. Round of applause for Jackie. Lovely stuff. I like that a lot. What a lovely question and answer. 12:56, cracking on. Rowan is in Bristol. Rowan, question or answer?
Answer.
Carry on, Rowan.
It's about the babies and chewing.
Oh, right? Yes.
They are born with the ability to swallow. It's a human instinct.
Yes.
But, when they start biting, like plastic toys and different types of objects.
Teething, so usually, isn't it?
Yeah, it's through experiencing these different textures and touching and feeling the different weight that teach themselves to adjust their motor responses. You know, for example, like stopping themselves choking.
Okay.
So, I did think that does answer the question. What was the question?
Do you know what I did then, Rowan? I'm so embarrassed. You could tell, and quite right for calling me out. I got distracted then. I didn't realise you'd finished. Do you know what I got distracted by?
What?
Phil has found the Google search for rice cookers. Seriously, I'm going to retweet the graph, because at 12:24 p.m. today, the number of people searching for rice cookers on Google went through the roof.
Is it actually?
I swear to you.
I've got one, so I know how good they are.
So I don't know how you find that stuff, but he's found it. And it is, it looks like, it's incredible. So anyway, sorry. What are your qualifications for that brilliant answer about babies chewing and swallowing?
I'm not going to lie, not much. I've got a degree in early childhood studies.
What do you mean not much? That's the best possible.
I haven't had a kid myself, so I'm not trying to.
Yeah, who cares? Round of applause for Ryan. And my apologies as well for that shame.
Don't worry.
Completely busted me. I thought I'd answered the question. Why has he stopped talking? Because I'm looking at a picture of Google searches for rice cookers coinciding with... I've just retweeted that now. It's from Phil Von Oppen, and just so you know, I'm not making it up. Jenny's in Shrewsbury. Jenny, question or answer?
It's an answer, James.
Carry on, Jenny.
It's an answer to the question about when a language is officially dead.
Oh, good. Go on.
It's when the last native speaker of a language has died out.
Native speaker is what we were looking for. So that was a sort of combination of all my pontifications, wasn't it? So
yeah, that's why they send quite a few people to Africa and to South America to get all the languages transcribed so that they've got the evidence of what the languages are like before anybody actually... The languages stopped existing. Apparently about 7,000 languages a year die out.
Good Lord, really?
Yeah.
It's kind of poignant, that, isn't it, that idea? What are your qualifications?
I have a degree in modern medieval languages and linguistics.
I mean, that'll do. Round of applause for Jenny. Amazing stuff. And we're out of time. I'm going to give the ball game to Sam, actually, who asked the question about the operating theatres, because it prompted two Ray Liotta's in response to the same question, which we've never had before. Although I did say at the time, wasn't it a very good question? Which, not for the first time, shows what I know. My apologies to Jack in particular, who was going to tell us about breaking the ceiling. We never got an answer to the copper question or the dreams. Here's Sheila Fogarty.
Don't you think it's funny how callers know if you've if they've lost your attention?
I've never been caught like that before.
But thankfully it doesn't happen that often, but we do have a lot of distractions happening around us while we're on air as well, don't we?
But it suggests
that there is a neural connection that isn't just about hearing.
Yeah, because if you can't see, you know when you're talking to someone when they've lost
interest.
Yeah, but you could be right
there.
Or the length of the pause, maybe. Anyway, sure.